Welcome everybody to All About Windows Phone podcast number 99. We're one away from 100. Ooh. I'm Steve. With me going, ooh, is Mr. Ray Blanford.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here. Yes, one more till the big 100. We're going to have to think of some special celebration to do for that. If you've got any suggestions, drop them via email, Twitter, or any of the other usual communication mechanisms.
Yeah, I'm very much hoping that Ray sends across a bottle of champagne, which I shall enjoy drinking.
Keep hoping, Steve.
A few items to comment on and to analyse from the last week or so. Windows Phone 8.1, the developer preview that many of us have been trying. We had an update a couple of weeks ago. There's now another update, so I guess this is either update 3 or update 2, depending on how you're counting. Version 8.10.12.393.890. Basically, it's a big bug fix update, as far as I can tell, Rafe. There's no change log being teased by Microsoft or by Joe Belfiore. No one's really noticed anything different. So do you think my gut feel is right, that we're so close to a stable 8.1 release at this point, that it is just, you know, under the hood bug fixes?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Bits of tuning going on, just those last little bugs. And of course, if you don't come across them, you'll never notice them. But I think this is probably the release that is going out on the brand new Windows Phone 8.1 devices, of which at the moment there's actually only, you know, a couple out there. Well, the 630 and the 930 and the Samsung that's going to get updated. Plenty of rumours and leaks about other devices from all sorts of sources, and I think we're not that far away from seeing some of the devices from the Indian manufacturers and those others that were announced both at Microsoft's Build conference and back in February at MWC. I downloaded it, installed it. I'd like to say that I've noticed my phone being more stable or better battery, but it was already pretty good in that department, so I haven't noticed any difference in the few days that I've had this. But I do think it's a good sign that Microsoft is delivering these updates quite quickly through the update process. I think it also shows you the difficulty that happens when the operators and the manufacturers kind of get involved with all the certification process. Kind of proves that Microsoft's update process can deliver sort of iterative updates very quickly, and probably just, you know, emphasizes that when there are delays, it's really probably not down to Microsoft, but rather down to the hardware partners and particularly the operators. I mean, those certification requirements are absolutely necessary. There's a big difference between updating, you know, a few hundred thousand devices through, you know, kind of a developer beta program where people know may not be perfect, and obviously rolling it out to 80 million odd Windows Phone devices, you know, with one of the big software updates. But nonetheless, kind of good to see that it's continuing to be updated, and as you say, Steve, more stable and basically release ready now.
I think I want to stay as a developer, but if it means getting OS updates and patches every couple of weeks for the next year, I think that would be a great way to go, Ray. Who needs manufacturers and network certified firmwares?
Well, it does mean that you'll probably get better battery life, you get the warranty with it and those kind of things. And of course, they are kind of in the development cycle, so that's why you're seeing quite a few updates. But you're kind of not wrong. You kind of hope that moving into the future, you have a process where there's a continuous pattern of updates. And you're kind of going to get that actually with some of the things that we, you know, talked about last week with Xbox Music and obviously the games as well. And it applies to a few other applications. And actually, we've seen a few new ones appear this week, which are effectively part of the whole Windows Phone 8.1 rollout. So maybe we could talk about those now, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess this first item is not actually part of the platform yet, but it could easily be part of the platform. But currently, it's labeled beta, and the name is Microsoft Help and Tips. It doesn't sound very exciting, but it's a kind of a essential part of the furniture now that manufacturers don't actually ship paper manuals with devices anymore. So you kind of expect to wing it in your first few hours with a device. And if there's a big icon that says Help and Tips, that's a jolly good place to start. I wrote this up briefly this afternoon as we record. This is currently Tuesday, the 3rd of June, in case anyone's wondering. And it's pretty nice, Ray. There's not that much content in terms of multimedia stuff yet. There's two videos, which sounds rather bare bones, but there's a lot of textual content and there is a full search engine. So I think if Microsoft can keep fleshing this out and then build it into the platform in maybe one firmware update's time, I think that'll be a jolly good start for new users.
Absolutely. And I think this sort of thing should be part of the platform. I mean, as you say, there is this kind of blurred line, and actually applies to all of these applications that are updated in place. Are they part of the platform, or, you know, because you can actually remove them if you choose to do so. So that aside, this kind of thing is really important. And we take for granted that we know how everything works. Even on the new release with 8.1, we look at the word flow and shape writing keyboard and go, yeah, that just works. But it's not necessarily obvious for someone else, either coming up from a feature phone or maybe coming over from another device. And while there is a certain amount of help built in, and Nokia have done their own efforts and kind of doing things around support, I think making this as clear as possible, and there's obviously a balance between how much content you put on and how much you keep this simple, emphasizing important bits. But I think in any platform, I mean, while Windows Phone is arguably the most accessible in terms of kind of picking things up and being intuitive of the major smartphone platforms, even it has its sort of own conventions that it follows. And if you're not familiar with Live Tiles, you may not necessarily understand what they're doing, and the keyboard's another good example of that. And it's interesting to see there's actually content specifically around switching from another platform. And I think having both the text content but also the video content's a really good move, because, some people prefer one thing to other, operate in a more visual way. And of course, search is important, so you can find what you want. I hope that they expand this and sort of put more effort into it, because it shouldn't really be something that the manufacturer is having to do unless it's, around their specific set of applications. It really is something that Microsoft should provide out of the box. And in that sense, it's long overdue.
Yeah. And linking to video content, I've seen all sorts of comments in the last few weeks from people actually admitting and admiring the fact that Windows Phone applications can launch video content really seamlessly and really slickly. You just tap on it and it switches to landscape and starts playing, and it's full screen, and there's really nothing to go wrong most of the time, but compared to other platforms where sometimes things don't go quite as you expect. So yeah, I think it's a really feather in the cap for Windows Phone, and if Microsoft can flesh out the video side of things in particular, because that's a really accessible way for new users to learn, and I think it's a big addition to the platform. Yeah,
it's important. I mean, you make that point about videos. It's something you could refer to maybe as designing for the mobile context, because that's obviously not the way it operates on a desktop PC, where generally the video will play in place and you'll take a specific action to make it full screen. But when you're on a mobile device like that, you've got a relatively limited screen size. Of course you want it to go, full screen. You don't really want to play in place, because it's going to be hard to see. And I don't think that's often done enough in the UI. And it's something that Microsoft has done well with Windows Phone, where sometimes, I think Android in particular suffers from this, it can feel like a UI that's sort of designed down a little bit, probably reflecting some of its roots. Microsoft did do that kind of fresh start with Windows Phone. Indeed, it's actually transferred now to the desktop, so the desktop arguably feels more like Windows Phone than the other way around. So it is an important one. But I know I interrupt you there, Steve, because I suspect you're going to talk about another long-awaited addition to the Windows Phone app lineup, or at least by some people.
Absolutely, yeah. And now this may put some people to sleep, the concept of a file manager. It's not the most exciting application genre. I know in the past I've, done a roundup of calculators, and I think that's possibly the only genre that's more boring than file managers. And also, I would argue that for a great number of Windows Phone users, certainly with integral memory, with no micro SD card, you still don't need a file manager, however much of a file manager freak you are, because everything basically stays within its own little silo, accessed by its own application. There's nowhere to move files to. But having said that, there aren't the new devices like the 1520, for example. Like the 930, is that integral or has that got expandable memory?
Oh, you're testing me there. I'm pretty sure it's got expandable memory, but no, it doesn't actually.
All right, okay. But there are quite a few new devices which do have micro SD card slots, and for those, it absolutely makes sense, because half the time you're taking a micro SD card from a previous device, for example. I know I've done that from Android devices in the past, and that you would basically inherit a whole hierarchy of files and folders and rubbish. And it's really good to, A, have a really clear out through that and get the micro SD card nice and fresh again without deleting your Windows Phone content. And also, yes, to be able to juggle content backwards and forwards between integral memory and the micro SD card. When you're talking about media in particular, that's a very easy way of doing it. Go on, thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm actually someone who keeps an awful lot of their stuff in the cloud in terms of documents, which is the sort of stuff I suppose I might want to go in via the file browser. But where this does come into its own, I think, is downloading something from the web, which is with Internet Explorer 11 in Windows Phone 8.1, is you've got much better support than you had previously. And obviously, you can make a choice about where to save it. But the fact you might want to save it later on, it does work well. And this, files is a a relatively basic implementation. But as you say, if you've got lots of content on something like a micro SD card, it makes sense. And because of, you know, the way the frameworks work on Windows Phone, it also makes it quite easy to share content. So you can select a specific file, then drop into the standard sharing framework. And that potentially means you can send it up to OneDrive or another cloud sharing service, or, you know, with a photo or a document, you can send it by email and that kind of thing. And so some people, I think, are, you know, brought up in a computing world which is filing system centric and will enjoy doing it in that way. Others, you know, are quite happily, maybe they're brought up in a mobile first world, will enjoy kind of going into the apps, as you were describing, the kind of the silo approach. It's just something that people have requested time and time again. It's always been at the top of kind of wish lists. And I think you're right. It's not for everybody, but Microsoft has delivered on a kind of a basic implementation here using the new APIs in Windows Phone 8.1. I'm sure there'll be some more complex file managers that are able to do more interesting things coming along from third parties. And there's a couple of simple ones already in place. I think Azure's Explorer and Pocket File Manager are early examples of that. But it's just this sense that Windows Phone 8.1 is more mature than Windows Phone 8. It's just that it's the extra little bits and make a difference. And on their own, they're kind of not that interesting. But you start adding them all up and they become, you know, quite a significant bit of update. I mean, this actually applies to all the platforms. You know, we've seen it in the last Android update. Apple have just announced iOS 8. It's not always often you see a startling new feature. I mean, Windows Phone 8 arguably has it with Cortana. That's, you know, playing catch up. But a lot of the stuff that comes in is less obvious on the surface, but is far reaching. And in Windows Phone 8.1, we talked about some of the frameworks and the new APIs that enables. You know, in iOS 8, you've kind of got the extensions, which much in the same way that, you know, Windows Phone allows apps to talk to each other and Android, and a certain amount of extensibility and integration between apps, you know, iOS 8 is going to get that. So it's taken a step forward, and actually I think it's kind of moved closer to the way Windows Phone and Android do things. You know, and equally well, in the, you know, that we've had the last Android update with changes to the way the UI work, and sort of the idea that Google introduces API changes at relatively low levels. I mean, it's something simple that hasn't really been exploited yet, but there's host card emulation, which in theory at least allows apps to kind of simulate or copy your credit cards or your membership cards and integrate with NFC and do it in a secure way. And those sorts of updates aren't that interesting when they're announced, but once apps start taking advantage of them, they really start to come into their own. And so I actually think in some ways we're moving away from the area where you'd see, you know, an OS update announced, become available, and everyone goes, oh, all these wonderful new features. It's actually sometimes takes a while for those features to really, you know, percolate or to, you know, be properly understood, because they actually are enabling third-party apps or services to do interesting things. So just been, you know, talking about the Big Bang app updates that we're used to, but actually Windows Phone 8.1 has kind of got even better since it was announced, as we've seen some of these extra apps come along, a lot of them from Microsoft, but also from third parties as well, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I should emphasize that this Files application, which you can find in the Windows Phone Store, we'll put all the links in the show notes, the links to the various coverage stories. Obviously, you don't get access to all files on the device.
That's right.
Tradition ever since, I think, the last decade or so, Rafe, has been that for a file manager, certainly supplied by the manufacturer on any smartphone, on any platform, basically you get access to the user file, which is normally a directory or a hierarchy, you know, documents, images, videos, and so forth. You don't get access to any of the operating system. I know you can, on some platforms, you can root it and jailbreak it or whatever, and you go hacking around and copying files backwards and forwards. This is much, much easier, much more friendly, and there's less to go wrong. So I think for the general user, I think files will be fine, but you don't get access to absolutely everything. So it's not a hacker's tool.
No, yeah. And that's as it should be, because frankly, we don't want someone moving something that breaks something else. And I think hackers and those interested will probably have other ways to get into things. I mean, that's where you talk about jailbreaking phones for an actual reason, rather than maybe just for the kind of the prestige of it. The Windows Phone hasn't had very much of that, and there are various technical reasons for that. But honestly, if you don't know what you're doing with that stuff, you really shouldn't be fiddling with it anyway.
Yeah, moving on with a couple of other articles that went up on the site, which I'd like Rafe's feedback on. First of all, 10 top tips for shooting better videos on the Lumia 1520, 930, and 1020. This is kind of an update of an article I did almost 3 years ago now, Rafe, when it ran kind of Lumia 800 chronology. And I thought, it's got to be time to update this. A lot's changed in terms of the software, the hardware. These are the PureView devices with oversampling. For example, we've got lossless zoom. There's quite a few extra tips and tricks which I've accumulated in the intervening years. So I put 10 tips together. I'm going to ask you for your favorite of the 10 as a sort of kind of a teaser for listeners. And my favorite is one that I thought of quite recently, really, after some real-world experience. And that's to keep your video clips short. For example, I'm at an event that Rafe's throwing. Rafe's throwing a party in his mansion in London, and he's invited me. And there's all sorts of interesting guests there. So I go around, and one option is just to start shooting video and wander around for half an hour, chatting to people and capturing everything live. Thinking, well, I'll edit that later. It's a real pain to do that for multiple technical reasons, not least the fact that Windows Phone currently, certainly with Nokia camera, tends to use a variable frame rate. Which means that the long video clips, you can get audio-video sync issues, which is a bit of a pain with some video editors I've found. And so it just makes things so much easier if you keep your video clips short, say 30 seconds here, a minute there, 2 minutes there, because there's no chance later on, there's no chance for any sync issue to build up and then you get lip sync issues. Also the fact that if you do one long sequence, what happens if the battery runs out of, 98% of the way through it? You've lost everything. If you've just been shooting short clips, you can have a problem, you can have a hang-up, the battery can go, you can plug in a charge, all of that can happen, and you haven't lost the whole lot. So my first big tip is keep your video clips and scenes short. So, Rafe, what's your favourite tip of the 10?
It's a tricky one. A few years ago, if you'd asked me this, it would be to shoot video on a tripod. That's become much less necessary because of the introduction of optical image stabilisation on all the devices we're talking about here, that really, that's no longer a problem, because there's nothing worse than watching kind of video that jumps up and down. That's always the case with kind of older family home video movies, be they shot on a kind of camcorder or going back a little bit further, cine film. And apart from Steve having quite the wrong idea about where I'm living in London, that's some another issue that we'll come on to later. I would agree with the short clip one. You actually see that if in kind of HTC have that in their Zoe camera, you can have really effective videos put together if you just combine 3 or 4 second clips. And while I'm sure I would enjoy watching a 20 minute video of your mobile phone collection, I think you have to bear in mind that normal people probably have shorter attention spans for that kind of thing. But for me, the biggest thing with video is actually getting good sound. And Stephen said it's kind of obvious in his article. Understand where the microphones are on your phone and make sure you're not covering them up when you're holding the phone. But it's a mistake I've made a couple of times because I haven't really thought about it. And think about the way you're going to be gripping the phone. It may be you have to be a slight contortionist to get it right. Nokia have generally been quite good about where they place them, but because people hold phones in so many different ways, it's not possible to be perfect. But audio and poor quality audio is something you'll notice, I think, almost more than poor quality video. I think that's more to do with the fact all of these smartphones now are capable of producing pretty decent video, and particularly if you then have good lighting and choose your subject carefully, that's quite easy. Audio is much harder to get right, and it's certainly the thing you notice between different smartphones. And maybe it's because Nokia have this advantage with their HAAC microphones, and other manufacturers have started to introduce these now or equivalents, but they're nowhere near commonplace. And it's when people say, oh, I've got a video I want to show you, and particularly when you're watching it on something off the device, on a TV, which is actually becoming more common now that it's easy to throw things around with, the DNA technology or HDMI cables or MirrorSync or whatever it happens to be, or Apple TV or Google Chromecast. It's the thing I always notice is kind of the poor quality audio, particularly things like wind in the background or just a lack of depth to the audio. When you switch to a Lumia device, one of Nokia's or now Microsoft, I'm going to have to get that right eventually, you really notice that depth of audio. And it's because, of course, everyone thinks of video as being visual, but audio is just an important component. So that would be my pick of your tips. But go and read all the other ones, because there's some great ones there. And I think the one I sort of inspired to go and try out next time I'm doing shooting a family occasion, if the family doesn't get too annoyed by that, is to try out multiple cameras, because lucky enough to have multiple devices. And I actually think making myself look more professional, like I'm doing a TV production with multiple camera angles, would be a great idea. Although I wonder if the subjects will be terribly keen if I make them do more than one take. I'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, of course, you could. I just set up a smartphone on a tripod, just pointing in the general direction as a wide view, and then shoot up close with the particular subject. So later on, you'd use the obviously the audio from the close-up and most of the close-up video, but just every now and then you could cut away to the wide view just, you know, to give a change of angle. I think that you could do that without having to, you know, use both hands and be, you know, like an octopus, flailing smartphones in each direction.
That's right. I do have to mention one of the comments on this article, though, which made me laugh out loud and got some pretty peculiar looks from people. And it was Gavin said that the best tip he could think of was to call Steve and let Steve do the recording, because Steve is an expert on this. And if you don't believe this, go and have a look at Steve's phone show, which he produces entirely on a smartphone. It's been different devices over the year. It's really high quality in terms of, you know, some of the shots, and there are some fancy different camera angles used at times. So well worth looking. And Death89, which in reply to that comment, says, yes, that's a great idea. We'll just have to wait for them to finish the Steve cloning project, and that'd be a fantastic idea. It'd be very useful to have more than one Steve around.
I'm not so sure about that, although my rates are very reasonable. Just going back to that audio thing, we did a series. I think Ewan was on location, some conference in America, and he sent back a video report. And he found a nice, beautiful, sunny, gorgeous, idyllic location in a park. I think it was Austin, Texas, right next to a waterfall. So all you could hear on the audio track was Ewan kind of just vaguely understandable with this massive water hammering down beside him. Sound is vitally important. Find a quiet place next time, even if it's a broom cupboard. So yeah, absolutely, find a quiet location out there and away from wind, away from breeze, away from water. Water is a real no-no with sound recording, and your audio soundtracking or videos will definitely be more professional. So but do see the link in the show notes, my list of my top 10, and it's about 3,000 word articles. Hopefully everyone can get something from that. I'm talking of long articles, I did a couple of my famous camera phones, smartphone shootouts, Rafe, within the Galaxy K Zoom, which I have in my hand here, and the Lumia 1020, which I also have in my hand, or my other hand. I would say arguably the two top camera smartphones in the world right now. I think it's pretty even, both in the stills and in the video, with each device having pros and cons. Did you get a chance to check through either of these articles, Rafe?
Yeah, I had a quick look through both of these articles, and just to make people familiar with it, the Galaxy K Zoom is effectively a kind of a variant or a specialist device of the Galaxy S5. So in one sense, it's obviously come out more recently than the 1020. But in terms of the kind of the camera, they're taking slightly different approaches, aren't they, Steve? You know, the 1020 is the kind of the oversampling with the zoom done that way, whereas the Galaxy K Zoom does actually have a mechanical zoom, and as a result, the zoom's actually bigger, and I suspect that's one of the areas where it's going to outdo the 1020. We'll get Steve to talk about the actual camera results in a minute, but one of the things that pleasantly surprised me, especially in comparison to the previous Samsung kind of camera flagship, which was the S4 Zoom, was there didn't seem to be any compromise on the performance. And so this, you know, behaved very much like it was a Note 3 or an S5 in terms of performance. And, you know, when you're, you know, using one of these specialist devices, you don't really want to give anything away in the other department. If you're the sort of person that, you know, buys an expensive camera phone like this, you're probably going to be wanting something that's similar to top end flagship models. And so it kind of interested me that came out of the article. But Steve, you're probably the best one to talk about the results from the actual camera. I mean, looking through some of the examples you posted, I found it very difficult to kind of pick out, you know, some of the difference between the different cameras. There was the usual kind of processing thing and choices around colors. That then becomes quite a personal preference. Yeah. I think I still prefer the color palette of the Lumia devices, because it just feels to me a little more natural, that it's that neutrality. But I do appreciate that that's something that's, you know, certainly open to debate and quite subjective.
I wouldn't actually say that the still and video results in the Lumia 1020 are natural. I think people tend to talk about the results being overly saturated or, you know, heavily saturated, very colorful, but not too far. The interesting thing is that the Lumia 1020 world that it presents to you, the colors, the richness, you want to live in that world. You appreciate the photos because they are attractive. In contrast, the results from the K Zoom, a bit like the Nokia N8 back in the day, back in the Symbian world, Ray, going back about 5 years now. Ultra natural, ultra neutral results. And as a result, they don't kind of look that attractive. Everything's kind of muted and you feel, no, I want to crank the saturation up. I want to crank the colors up. I want to do something with the photos to make them look more appealing. We've become so used to having, you know, AMOLED screens and rich colors. And I can absolutely see where Samsung are going with this, but I've kind of got used to those rich colors now, and I miss them when they're not around. More than that, though, I would say that the K-Zoom does have its own issues. There's the, obviously, you, it can't have a huge sensor because the physical optics of a big zoom lens means that it's got to, you know, shine light on a fairly small area. So that the fact that it's got a 10 times optical zoom also means it's got to have a relatively small sensor. So 1 over 2.3, for example, I think it's about half the size of the physical size of the sensor in the 1020. And that has an effect in terms of noise levels. Also, as you zoom into a situation, you're again reducing the effective aperture of the amount of light you're gathering. So that brings in more noise. So there are absolutely definitely pros and cons. You may remember that when Nokia started off this whole PureView thing on the back of a napkin, famously, their starting point was that they had a smartphone, the Symbian-based Nokia N93, which had optical zoom. And it was a great little phone for the time. Didn't have enough RAM, but that's another matter. But the optical zoom had its own issues, had its pros and cons. They thought, well, how can we do smartphone imaging better with zoom without having a bulky optical mechanism? They came up with this, you know, 41 megapixel sensor and doing digital computational photography. And those same pros and cons absolutely still apply today. The K-Zoom, for situations where you're in video or stills, where you're actually needing to zoom in quite a long way, you know, to spot something on a stage that's 100 meters away, or something, or some wildlife that will be scared if you were too close up, that sort of thing. It's great, great photographs, full resolution at that zoom, take it into low light, and of course you've then got noise coming in. Also the fact that if you're zoomed in that much, you're not capturing the whole scene. One of the beautiful things about the PureView system on the Lumia 1020, as you know, Rafe, is that the reframing system, that you can zoom in, you know, three times losslessly, four times or six times in video. In the still case, you can actually reframe afterwards. So you can shoot zoomed in, you know, a crop of Rafe Blanford at a party with a beer in his hand, and think afterwards, well, no, oh, I really wanted the whole scene. I wish I hadn't zoomed in. Well, you can reframe, and their whole scene is actually there and was captured in the high-res version. And that's one of the really clever things about the software-based PureView approach. Overall, if I had to pick one of the two devices to shoot photographs and video for my life, I think I'd pick the 1020 at this stage. Even though the Galaxy K Zoom is newer, that's ignoring all aspects of the operating system and applications which do or don't work. That's a separate issue. But purely on imaging and video, I think the 1020 just edges it, but it really is a close-run thing. I did my video comparison with the split-screen presentation. It was fascinating asking people to judge from my comments and from the video which phone they thought produced the better video. And there was a complete split, roughly 50-50 across the different sites and different people I asked. So it absolutely depends on what you want to shoot, under what light conditions, and I guess ultimately also, given that they're so close, which operating system you prefer and which ecosystem.
Yeah, there's no doubt that both of these devices push back the boundaries, and I actually think it's testament to how far ahead the 1020 was that it's taken Samsung obviously 9 months to come up with an equipment and actually taking a very different approach. What you're saying there about reframing, I think, is a point that's worth emphasizing. You do need to think conceptually differently about how you understand the capture of your photos, because I think on the face of it, you go, oh, I prefer having an optical zoom and having, you know, the extra zoom. But you do have to, as you say, set that against the kind of the convenience, which I think suits the smartphone lifestyle better. I mean, if you're really looking to have big zoom, you're still going to go for the standalone camera, and there are point and shoots that are based around zooming, or you know, you can get a DSLR with a big lens on. And of course, this comes back to the whole debate over, you know, would you use your smartphone as your only camera, which lots of people now do, but it's kind of more pointed for this kind of super camera phone type device, which are clearly going to be more attractive to the people who are more likely to have a standalone camera, or at least consider that in their purchase equation. And I actually think the 1020, by doing something a little bit different, gives itself an advantage. And ultimately, it does still come down to that sensor size thing when you're in edge cases. I mean, what surprised me about the K-Zoom is how well it performed. And actually, I think Samsung has done some great work on that. And if you're shooting in easy conditions or good conditions, very difficult to judge the difference. I haven't actually tried one out myself. So looking at some of the samples that Steve produced, yeah, there are times when I think actually I prefer the photo that the K-Zoom has produced. And it's interesting what I was saying about natural colours. That probably tells you everything you need to know about that debate about what's more accurate, what's more natural. And it's quite a subjective thing. But I do think there's still an argument to be made that when you're talking about an edge case now, it might be low light or some other difficult to shoot scenario. The 1020 just has the advantage of that extra sensor size and some complex algorithms that just go a little bit deeper, maybe give it an advantage. It'll be interesting to see, Steve, after you've used it for a little bit longer, which I'm sure you're going to do, whether you change your opinion on which one you prefer. And as you say, the software side of things is a whole other debate. Android, I think, has an advantage there because of the numerous third-party applications. But it's difficult to get away from liking that default Nokia camera, which does make it very easy to change the settings, which, of course, when you're talking about these high-end sort of super camera phones, actually becomes more important than on your standard smartphone.
Yeah, and there's the other factor, of course. I know we've talked about the optical zoom, and if you need to zoom, then you need one of these devices. There's also the flash technology. Now, we had talked about the 930 and the 1520, both with LED flash. I go back to my Xenon rant again. I still say that for moving subjects like human beings and pets in low light or indoors, you need a Xenon flash. You need a proper flash. And the K-Zoom, like most standalones, which kind of is a standalone camera sandwiched into a phone body, has a proper flash, as does the 1020. And for those two reasons alone, that these are the two devices, these are the two phones in the entire world to go for if you want to be taking great photographs indoors. And I still fail to see why manufacturers don't make more of this. I did point out in my article, I'm writing various K-Zoom articles at the moment, as you can imagine, and I do acknowledge that to manufacturers, there are costs involved in a Xenon flash. The bulb is more expensive. The capacitor has to be allowed for in terms of space and cost. It's more power hungry. It probably doesn't last as long overall. You can't use it as a video light. There are all sorts of reasons why manufacturers wouldn't want to put a Xenon flash in. And I can quite see their point. But I would contend that there's definitely a niche in the market for a certain category of smartphone with decent cameras with proper flash. And I'm great to see that there's now one such device in the Android world in the K-Zoom. And I hope that we'll get a few more in the next year or so. And hopefully, who knows, maybe another one or two in the Windows Phone world as well. But we must move on. Now, before we finish, Rafe, we always used to do an application of the week. So while I rack my brains, because I'm totally unprepared, I know that you've got two prepared. One's a serious application and useful, and one's a game. So if you could wax lyrical while I have racked my brains.
Well, both of these are actually ports from existing platforms, as are an awful lot of the games and the apps that come out. But these are quite high-profile ones that have been talked about a lot, and it's a kind of another example of the app gap being closed. And we said before that it's kind of narrow, but it's still very much there because there are apps that I thought, oh, I'm really pleased to see that because I want to be able to use it on my Windows Phone device. The first of which is Hotel Tonight, which is actually exactly what it sounds like. It's a way to be able to book a hotel night for the same day. And you might wonder why you want to do that. Well, the truth is, if you're traveling somewhere and haven't got a hotel sorted out, this is kind of invaluable because it's focused around that scenario. The interesting thing, to kind of the stat to back this up, is that 40% of the hotels booked on a smartphone are actually for within the next 48 hours. So it is people arriving at a destination or planning a business trip in the next few days, wanting to do a hotel, and maybe they're setting up while they're traveling or on the train or something like that. And so this has now arrived on Windows Phone. It's been nicely implemented. There's some thought that's gone into it, and it's an invaluable tool if you're ever doing kind of regular travel. Perhaps not one for Steve to install, despite his recent excursions, but I know a lot of people will be pleased to see this arriving on Windows Phone. The other one I wanted to mention is Badland. Now, this is a kind of a side-scrolling, I guess you'd call it an adventure game. It's kind of moving on from kind of the platformer-style games. It's been well-reviewed. It's got lots of awards, including kind of an Apple Design Award, one of the very prestigious ones. I think that was a year ago. It's available on Android and iOS, and it's recently come out for Windows Phone, and more than that, it's actually available both the high end and the 512 megabyte low end devices, somewhat unusual for kind of some of the high profile ports, which are quite graphically intensive, because this is a gorgeous game to look at. It's got great visuals and great audio, so I can thoroughly recommend it. So download it and give it a go. And there's two app recommendations. Just one more I was going to mention that I saw coming out tonight is actually the HP AO remote application, and this enables printing from your Windows Phone device. And I actually have an HP printer, so I downloaded this and was just trying out just a few minutes ago and was able to tip my printer. I didn't actually do any printing because I didn't want to have that noise on the podcast, but it's great to have that. So if I want to print out a photo directly from my phone, I can now do so very easily rather than having to sort of send it off to OneDrive or use OneDrive to get it onto my computer. And actually, it's one of the few scenarios that I think makes a lot of sense for mobile printing from a smartphone. I'm not really a sort of person who looks to print out documents or a great deal of calendar information or something like that, but you know, photos which I capture on the phone and want to be able to share with people who, you know, I can't do it online, so I want to send them through snail mail. It does still exist despite what some technologists might have you believe. You know, it's really great, so I'm looking forward to actually trying that out once we finish recording this podcast.
Well, my app pick is rather quirky and it relates to travel. Rafe did mention that I've been away the last tail end of last week on an actual international trip, which is very rare for me. But in case I want to get even more adventurous, but not really, there's Pretend Being There, which is a really awkwardly named application. But the idea is that you do a selfie of yourself against a fairly neutral background, and you then pick an actual background of a place like Antarctica or the Brazilian rainforest or the pyramids or wherever you want to go virtually, and it literally pastes one onto the other with the appropriate cutting out of the silhouette, and it's really not bad for social photo sharing. It's almost believable and it's great fun. So for people who are ribbing me that I never go anywhere, I can just send them a photograph of myself next to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and it's there, the photographic proof. Or is it anyway? Pretend Being There, we'll put a link to that in the show notes along with Rafe's rather more serious and more mainstream applications. And let's keep this podcast short, Rafe, and we'll save all the rest for next time. Thank you very much for listening. We will catch you next week on the All About Windows Phone Inside podcast, unless you've got anything else to say, Rafe.
Nope, I don't think so, Steve. That's a good place to end. Next week, we'll try and round up some of the rumours, maybe talk about some of the new devices. May well have a Lumia 630 to talk about as well. I know we're getting lots of questions about that. But without further ado, I think that's a good place to end the podcast. So thanks very much to Steve, and thanks everyone for listening.